from the Cyber Hub bunker in studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. Obviously, I'm not in the studio and kind of pre-recording this morning's episode just by about an hour or so from airing time due to a meeting commitment I had to make this morning. So thank you all for tuning in. We've got a very, very busy show for all of y'all today. So let's not waste a lot of time going through some of the semantics outside of please, please, thank you so much for tuning in. Please subscribe. Please go follow us on Substack, jamesazar.substack.com. Exclusive content is only available there. While I post and air this podcast everywhere, I only post specific content, especially my writing, only on Substack, where you can go and support the show as well. Now, this morning, while I'm traveling, I've got my double espresso mug, and I was going to go down. There's a Starbucks in the hotel lobby, and I was going to get some coffee, but then I found Celsius, and I was like, I'd prefer to get a cold Celsius this morning to kind of kick off the day and get my coffee later. So coffee cup cheers, y'all. One Celsius a day keeps the doctor away. Is that a thing? Maybe, maybe not. All right. Let's go ahead and kick off with this OWASP data breach that we're getting a little bit more details on. So the Open Worldwide Application Security Project, also known as OWASP, on Friday announced that PII provided by aspiring members over a decade ago was exposed in a recent data breach. With tens of thousands of members, OWASP is an online community that seeks to improve software security through open source projects and obviously the OWASP Top 10. OWASP launched in 2001, and as part of its early membership process, members were required to show a connection to the community, and then it collected resumes from 2006 to 2014. Now, if you're OWASP members in those years and provided your resume as part of joining OWASP, they want you to assume that your resume was part of this breach, according to the foundation. They identified a misconfiguration in February of this just last month of 2024. The organization reviewed the wiki configuration for other security weaknesses, completely removed the resumes from the site, disabled directory browsing, purged the Cloudflare cache, and requested for the data to be removed from the web archive. OWASP says it's in the process of notifying impacted individuals via the email addresses identified during its investigation of the incident. So there's that. Insurance giant Prudential Financial started notifying the 36,000 individuals that had their PII compromised in a data breach early last few months ago in February of 2024. I forget we're in April. I keep thinking March. This was initially discussed and disclosed in mid-February in a regulatory filing with the SEC. The incident occurred on February 4th, was identified a day later. At the time, Prudential said the attackers accessed systems containing company admin and user data, as well as employee and contractor accounts. 1 week later, Black Cat Ransomware Group claimed responsibility for the attack, listing Prudential on its Tor-based leak site. The threat actor is also responsible for the major U.S. health system last month at Change Healthcare. That's really rattling feathers in the healthcare industry and with regulators over the centralized control of these giants, by the way. And if you think of what's really happened is, a lot of these intermediaries have become so large, and because there's only a few of them, if one of them goes down, it really paralyzes so much of the system. And that's exactly what happened with Change Healthcare, by the way. And I think that's part of the reason why Black Cat and Alpha V kind of said, we're retiring for now. They're going to come back under a different name, but for now, they're kind of stepping away from this. We'll see the impact here later, obviously, but nonetheless, there's that. And those are kind of our breach stories. Now, let's really get into something that's, I think, a bit disturbing, also kind of shows you the challenges that we experience as practitioners. The vulnerability database backlog over at NVD has increased in volume. It's created a huge backlog. And according to NIST, there's been changes in agency support to the project that's essentially causing this backlog. So the National Vulnerability Database is significant for anyone who does vulnerability management, and that's every single security practitioner on the planet. But those who have the role of a vulnerability management engineer or whatever the case may be, the NVD is really where they go to kind of research and get a lot of data. For years, it's been an invaluable expert and key information has been available there. Well, in mid-February, important metadata from the NVT was removed and organizations struggled to process waves of new vulnerability. NIST posted a notice on its website claiming it was working to establish a consortium to address challenges in the NVD program and developed improved tools and methods. You'll temporarily see delays in analysis efforts during this transition, they said on February 15th. Since then, the number of vulnerabilities processed by the NVD has dropped extensively. So far in 2024, NIST has analyzed about half of the 8,785 vulnerabilities submitted. Last month, they were only able to analyze 199 vulnerabilities out of the 3,300 submitted. Spokesperson for NIST called the database a key piece of the nation's cybersecurity infrastructure, but confirmed to Recorded Future that there is a growing backlog of vulnerabilities submitted to the NVD that require analysis. This is based on a variety of factors, including an increase in software and therefore vulnerabilities, as well as a change in interagency support. Currently, they're prioritizing the analysis of the most significant vulnerabilities. In addition, they're working with agency partners to bring in more support for analyzing vulnerabilities and have reassigned additional NIST staff for this task as well. CyberScoop reported that NVD program manager Tanya Brewer told an audience at VoneCon about a plan to create an outside consortium to make the database better. She listed dozens of potential improvements and explained that the NVD staff has stayed the same at 21 people while the number of vulnerabilities continued to grow. So they need some help there, y'all. And if we can do anything as a community, it's to support the critical work done by NIST on the National Vulnerability Database. That is significant for everyone. And they definitely could use some help there as well. Sellafield LTD, the managing company of the Sellafield nuclear site, will be prosecuted by the UK's independent nuclear safety regulator for alleged cybersecurity offenses. According to the regulator, the infractions were garnered over a four-year period from 2019 to 2023. However, the regulator noted its announcement, there is nothing to suggest that public safety had been compromised over these information technology security offenses, according to the office. This is not the first time this company has been under scrutiny. Its cybersecurity issues were also addressed in the chief nuclear inspector's annual report on the country's nuclear industry that was released last September in the UK. And in December, The Guardian released a bombshell report that APTs backed by Russia and China have been breaching the Sellafield IT systems as far back as 2015. Attacks, at the paper alleges, have been constantly covered up by senior staff at the site, which holds a vast store of radioactive waste and the world's largest store of plutonium. Though it's not currently known whether any senior managers were involved in these security failings, and if so, whether they'll face charges if convicted, an individual can face a maximum of 2 years in prison. The reactor is located in the Sellafield grounds, and even though it was closed in 2003, it's still Europe's largest nuclear site. The ONR considers it to be one of the most complex and hazardous nuclear sites in the world. Although cyber attacks on nuclear power plants aren't necessarily common, they have occurred on rare occasions, and so there's those risks there. We'll see, and we'll keep appraised as to that prosecution there as well. And now to a story that I think shook me a bit to my core this morning. The Indian government said it rescued and repatriated about 250 citizens of the country of India that were in Cambodia who were held captive and coerced into running cyber scams. The Indian nationals were lured in with employment opportunities to that country, but were forced to undertake illegal cyber work, according to the Ministry of External Affairs, adding that they rescued 75 people in the past 3 months alone. It also said it's working with the Cambodian authorities and agencies in India to crack down on those responsible for these fraudulent schemes. The development comes in the wake of a report from the Indian Express that said more than 5,000 Indians are stuck in Cambodia and were forced into what they term cyber slavery by organized crime rackets to scam people in India and extort money by masquerading as the law enforcement authorities in some cases. The report also tracks with an earlier disclosure from Interpol, which characterized the situation as human trafficking-fueled fraud on an industrial scale. This included an accountant from the state of Telangana, who was lowered to Southeast Asia, where he was forced to participate in online fraud schemes in inhumane condition. He was subsequently let go after paying a ransom. In another instance, highlighted by the Indian Express, one of the rescued men was recruited by an agent from the South Indian city of Mangaluru for a data entry job, only to be asked to create a fake social media accounts with photographs of women and use them to contact people. We had targets, and if we didn't meet those, they would not give us food or allow us into our rooms, according to the individual who was rescued. China and the Philippines have undertaken similar efforts to free hundreds of Filipinos, Chinese, and other foreign nationals who are entrapped in a forced criminal activity running what's called a pig butchering scheme. These schemes typically start with the scammer adopting a bogus identity to lure prospective victims and investing in a non-existing crypto business that are designated to steal their funds. The fraudsters are known to gain their target's trust under the illusion of a romantic relationship. So this is happening in Cambodia, Myanmar, Laos, the Philippines, and Thailand, and as well as in other places. And they're not just targeting the US here, they're targeting China, they're targeting India, they're targeting other Asian nations, and so forth. And so, these are significant human rights violations, and definitely worthy of our attention, and to quite understand what we're up against with these cyber criminals. It's not that just they hack and hold you at ransom, they also violate human rights at the most basic of it all. This story really is a bit disturbing. The cybersecurity landscape is facing a new threat with the emergence of Darkula, a phishing as a service platform that's being released for cyber criminals that has over 20,000 domains using advanced techniques to target over 100 countries. Unlike traditional phishing kits, Darkula utilizes modern technology such as JavaScript, React, Docker, and Harbor, akin to the tools by cutting-edge tech startups. This allows for seamless updates and the addition of new features and anti-detection measures without the need to reinstall the phishing kit altogether. The Darkula platform has adopted methods to distribute phishing URLs, particularly through text message and rich communication services, which bypass traditional SMS firewalls. The tactic has proven effective against organizations like the USPS, and has been observed in high-profile phishing attacks in the UK and the US. Now, this kind of goes into something else. This is the phishing as a service model cyber criminals use, and it's one of the ones in the kill chain, that's critical. But the other one is, are we securing text messages? Are we educating to that? Because the threat actors are moving from email because they realize they have a lower success rate to text. And if you're trusting your junk mailbox on your iMessage to put stuff there, and it does a pretty decent job at it, all it takes is one of those to get through in order for that person to fall victim. Educate, monitor, block. That's going to be key. And I think most people would be grateful for that as well. So just keep your eyes on this as well. The FTC says the U.S. lost $1.1 billion last year to cyber scams, a figure that's three times higher than 2020. The agency compiled this data based on 490,000 reported scams in 2023. Of those, 330,000 were for business impersonation complaints, and the rest represent government impersonation incidents. According to the agency, most of these scams were conducted via phone calls, currently in decline, followed by email and text, which were on the rise for the third year in a row. Reports show an increasingly blurred line between business and government impersonation scams. The top five scam types the FTC highlighted are copycat account security alerts, phony subscription renewals, fake giveaway discounts or money to claim, bogus problems with the law, and made-up package delivery problems. All in all, we are bleeding financially due to this cyber crime. And finally, Google has agreed to purge billions of data records reflecting users' browsing activities to settle a class action lawsuit that claimed the search giant tracked them without their knowledge or consent in the Chrome browser. The class action was filed in 2020, alleges the company misled users by tracking their internet browsing activity. We thought it was remain private by using the incognito mode on browsers like Chrome. In late December of last year, it emerged that the company had consented to settle the lawsuit. The deal is currently pending the approval of U.S. District Judge Yvonne Gonzalez Rogers. The settlement provides broad relief regardless of any challenges presented by Google's limited record keeping. Much of the private browsing data in these logs will be deleted in its entirety, including billions of event level data records that reflect class members' private browsing activities. So there's that settlement there as well. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern, live everywhere you catch us. You can also find us on your favorite podcast listening platform like Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day. And most importantly, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.